It's time to start talking about trusted leadership. Well, welcome back. This is Bradley Waldrop, and today we're going to talk about trusted leadership. And as we talk about this, it might or might not resonate with you. We'll have to see. I do want to give a lot of credit back to, I think it's Stephen M.R. Covey, it sort of introduced me to one of these concepts. One of these concepts is the speed of trust. There's a book out there called The Speed of Trust, and the speed of trust is really an important concept, is an interesting bit of ideas. And one of the reasons why for us it seems to be really important is if you go back and you look at the profession of civil engineering, mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, sort of those folks that are licensed to practice engineering, they are in an elite class of individuals who are trusted by the public to deliver something that is safe and is practical and usable. I say the practical and usable part pretty quickly because not every project is dedicated to being practical, and not every project is not every project fits the mold. However, you are part of your responsibility as a professional is public safety. Your sort of persona in the sort of practice of civil engineering, the practice of mechanical or any of the other discipline, the practice of that engineering is to be able to follow code that's been provided, help develop code if you need to, and you know, all in all, when you stamp and sign something, you're taking responsibility for the work. And in taking responsibility for the work, you're also taking responsibility for adhering to the public safety guidelines and rules that are available to us. And all of that to say, you know, if there are ways for us as a profession and you as an individual to sort of set yourself apart, it is to sort of lean into the trust side of the business. So really, really successful. Let me go back. Let's talk about maybe a story a little bit. One morning I was walking into the engineering office about 7:30 in the morning. And lo and behold, there's a voicemail on my machine at the same time, you know, on the phone. When I walked in, and it was, "Hey, Bradley, this is so-and-so from so-and-so. Can you give me a call as soon as you get in?" I go, "Okay." Well, it only happened, I think, 10 or 15 minutes prior. So I gave him a call back, and I said, hey, Steve, what's going on?" Steve said, "I have this problem. There's a bridge that was cut in half, and I need some help." So I ran to the closet, made sure I had a hard hat and vest. I had a hard hat in my car, grab a vest and everything else I need for PPE, run out to the job site, which was about an hour and 15 minutes away from the office. And so I was going as quickly as I could. I got to the job site, and being at the job site, there was traffic kind of everywhere, all you know, backed up in two different directions. And there was a contractor with just looking at me like, "Well, what do we do now?" My client, Steve, was also saying, "What do we do now?" And what's interesting is no one had a contract. I didn't have a contract to perform the work that I was being asked to do, but I was being called because I was a trusted advisor. I was on the speed dial for problems that happened in everyday life for Steve. Steve viewed me as one of those guys that could come out to a job site, quickly assess what was going on, and help him get through the tragedy of what he was seeing, right? And tragedy, it is all relative, right? If your day has not a whole lot going on, and someone cuts a bridge in half lengthwise, all of a sudden, that becomes a tragedy, right? You've got You've got to worry about getting people safely to and from. You have to worry about how much it's going to cost. You have to worry about who's responsible for it. You got to worry about how to communicate with everybody else on the team. There are a lot of things going on. And Steve was relying on me to take care of the immediate need of making sure that this thing was safe for folks to be able to travel on. So sat and talked to the contractor for maybe 10 or 15 minutes, gave me the skinny. So what was going on is, if you guys can remember, in the probably late 1990s, early 2000s, there was a huge push, certainly in California, I don't know if it was a huge push in every other state, to put fiber optic in the ground. And fiber optic was so lucrative at the time that what they would do in order to budget for the project is that they would find an alignment, they would count up all the utility crossings in the alignment, make the assumption that they were going to cut through every single one of them, tried to figure out what it would cost to repair those, and that was the fee in order to install fiber optic. So when they didn't hit a utility, they made a truckload of money. When they did hit a utility, they were at least prepared with a contingency plan, figured out how to make these repairs in the field as they were going, going along. And that's how fiber optic was going into the ground in our area, right? I can't say that that's how it was being done everywhere in the nation. Well, so this team was discussing it with me. They were telling me what it is that they were challenged with. And as they were cutting a trench, right, the trench is only, 4 or 6 inches wide. They were cutting the trench. And as they were cutting the trench, they continued to go through blades one after another after another. And they couldn't figure out what was going on. It was sort of like, really hard asphalt that they were trying to cut through in order to get this fiber optic line put down. Well, After they destroyed all these blades, they got the saw cutting off, the saw cutting machines off of the road, and they brought in a ripping tooth on the back of a backhoe, and they would hit the piece that was in the middle to break up the asphalt. They could come through with either a shovel or a skip loader and take the material off of the site. Now they have, now they're down to base, or they're down to native material, and then they use a normal trenching machine to cut through, the regular soil and potentially all the other utilities that were in the way. Well, they continued to tell me, I never imagined it would take this many saw blades in order to get only this far. And it was really a small bridge, but the bridge itself was this old T-beam bridge, and they saw cut it lengthwise between the girders, and they didn't even know what they were doing, but they cut all the rebar and they cut the concrete, right? So what had really happened is, if you look at the roadway was asphalt. Well, it was an asphalt overlay on an existing bridge. They didn't see the barrier rails. The barrier rails were sort of off of the roadway. Nobody's really paying much attention to it. And the shoulders were not the shoulders. You couldn't see the bridge section. There was a slight amount of soil on the shoulders for the bridge itself. And so they, in their own mind, just imagined that it was a culvert underneath there, and they were they were on their way. So what happened was, they hit it with a ripper tooth. And after they had cut it, they hit it with a ripper tooth, and sure enough, sections of the bridge deck went right down into the water. And they were standing on the bridge deck, gazing through a 6-inch wide slot cut lengthwise down the entire length of the bridge. And it was my job to figure out how to make sure that it was safe, get traffic back and forth, and then come up with a scheme for them to have to do to repair the bridge, and then hold them accountable to do the work in the field. So we were able to do that. We got it back open to traffic within, only a few hours. And then we successfully patched the bridge over the following few weeks and got everything taken care of. But the point of that story is, if I wasn't their trusted advisor, they would have never called me to try to, have me come and help. we want to be in the driver's seat in our own career. We want to be the trusted advisor for our clients. We want to be the trusted advisor for the community in which we live, because that's what we do, right? We help other people, and we want to be in a career in which we provide this really great service and we're respected and thanked for the work that we provide. Now, that trust doesn't just doesn't happen by itself, right? You have to figure it all out, and sometimes trust occurs over time as you're sort of doing the dance together. You're hearing very clearly from others whether or not, you know, you're making good on the promises you're delivering and how all of that sort of works together. But one of the other things that does occur in there is that there's sort of a formula to help develop trust amongst your team, amongst your peers, amongst your supervisor, and amongst your clients. And that formula is pretty basic, but if you don't pay attention to it, you're going to kind of get sideways. So here's the way it works in my own mind. If you go and there's really sort of three categories of things that you need to deliver in order to be trusted and have that trusted advisor status. So in order to provide trust, you need three things. Those three things are: you got to have the technical chops to get the work done, you got to have really good solid character, and you have to have a process that people don't get schizophrenic about. So let me kind of walk you through that and tell you why that's important. So imagine for just a minute you're going to delegate some things to someone, and this is a really good delegation kind of exercise to think about, and it's one of the reasons why we don't delegate is people don't have the technical chops to get the work done, right? If I look at my to-do list and only do the things that I can do, and I have a whole bunch of things that I'm trying to push off to someone else so that they can do it and make most effective use of my time, make effective use of their time, if they don't have the technical chops to get the work done, I may not want to train them. Well, that means that I also don't have enough trust that they'll get it done. Maybe they don't have enough initiative to learn it on their own. Maybe they haven't demonstrated all of that and their capabilities. So I might be real hesitant to give it away. Well, our clients are the same way. Our bosses are the same way. Our peers are the same way. Our teams are built the same way, right? If you're trying to ask someone to do things or you're trying to get them to help you out and they don't know how to do the work, unless you're in training mode and you have this mentality that it's going to be okay, you're really, really reluctant to give it to them along the way. So you got to have technical chops to get the work done, all right? And you're going to hear this over and over and over from me. When we're building teams, we're building teams based on technical chops. Well, some of those technical chops are, you know, real hard skills of math and science. Some of those skills are soft skills about talking to people, about working through relationships, about dealing with conflict and all this other stuff. So don't think that technical chops just means that you got to be good at math and science. All right, it's how to get the work done. You can execute well. All right, so that's the first thing. Now imagine, right? So if you had something to give away to someone, or you asked them to help you and they didn't have the technical chops, but they have really solid character and they have a really good process, all that means is that they're going to try to do the right thing, but they may not have the skill to just even execute anything, right? And you'll be able to predict what's going on, but that doesn't help you. All right, so the second is you have to have a solid moral character. And what I mean by that is that as you're working with individuals, you have to be trustworthy. You have to be respectful. You have to be, you have to have a set of core values that the other person honors, right? So what doesn't matter what your upbringing is, most of the sort of solid core moral characteristics are displayed in some sort of Judeo-Christian background. We have a lot of it in the law that we have here in the United States. And it is a set of rules by which we have all said we need to operate correctly, right? We don't need liars. We don't need cheats. We don't need thieves. We don't need murderers. We need people to behave well. Well, that's easy to do when the chips aren't down, right? When everything is going swimmingly well, it's easy for people to behave well. But when things kind of get compressed and there's a big stressful event, you're going to start to see the character of the individuals that you're working with. And if you haven't been able to demonstrate that character, or people have not observed that kind of character, they're reluctant to give you a task to do, because if it does not go well, they are afraid that it's going to turn into a disaster. It's going to be people screaming and shouting. It's going to be people being disrespectful and all this other stuff, right? So if you have the good technical chops to get it done, but your moral character is lacking, there could be a wake of destruction as you're getting it done, even though there's a solid process in place to get it done, right? So you got to have the three things. Those three things include the technical chops to get it done, good moral character. And then the third bit is a process that is understood, that's predictable, so that you take the schizophrenic behavior out of the other people that you're working for or working with. Let me give you a kind of an interesting example. So if I were to take on a project and someone said, "Hey, Bradley, I need for you to design this bridge over here," I might have the technical chops to do it, and I'm a good, I hope most of the time I have good moral character. There have been mistakes in the past, but we can talk about those later. But if I stand up and say, "Hey, look, I'm here and I'm committed to do the right thing by you the entire time. We're going to work together on this. Don't worry, I'll get it done." And if someone is reluctant to give it to me, they might be reluctant to give it to me because they don't understand the process I'm going to use, right? They don't know the flow of work, who's responsible for what, when they're going to be communicated with, and how that whole thing kind of plays out. However, if I had come in and said, "All right, I appreciate it. You know, you've seen my resume, and I am really good at these bridges. Let me tell you a few stories about how things didn't go right all the time, but how we behaved and how we're going to, you know, plan on getting through any of the challenges that we might have here on this particular project for things that I'm not in control of, and what I would expect everybody's behavior to be, and not allow it to get out of control. And let me walk you through the process I'm going to use in order to develop the design, have you interact with the development team, and then bring it out to construction." All of a sudden, you're very, very settled, right? Because now you know what to expect. Well, so these all three things have to happen at the same time. You have to have the technical chops. You have to have good moral character, and you have to have a proven, predictable process in order to get the work done for people to be trusting of you. And that's kind of where I was when this previous story with Steve. He called me because I was already working on bridge work for him, so he understood my technical capabilities. We had already walked through some character challenges where we had had back and forth between us to negotiate. We had back and forth between us to talk about staffing and things that he was happy with and not happy with, and I was respectful and I honored him. And then in the third bit, he knew that as I was on the phone with him, I was trying to collect data so that I could explain to him where we were headed in this. And then as I was on the phone on the road, I was talking to him about the things that I needed for him to do so that we could work through this process together, right? And initially, we need to gather some data. We need to figure out how to make sure that everyone is safe. And then once we understand that, we'll come up with a game plan on how to get this bridge fixed and work with your contractor to assess whatever is necessary. If they can do it all, outstanding. If they can't do it all, then we're going to be responsible to go help you find somebody. And then after they do the work, or as they're doing the work, we're going to be there to inspect the work and make sure that it's done per code. and then let them, you know, proceed on their with their project and get your bridge back open, and you get a chance to talk to everyone involved to make sure that, you know, you're messaging to your boss and you're talking to the public about how to be safe around the job site, so on and so forth, right? So we're talking about the process. They understand there is a process, and I didn't just say, trust me, it's going to be okay. So the same is true in your own career. As you are going through your day-to-day, start to think about what are the ways that you can improve what it is you do every single day. What on the technical side, what can you get better at that maybe, you know, helps you grow into the next role or provide new service or different service to your existing, your current clients or new clients? Maybe even what is it that you could do better now in the current role that you have with the current projects and the current clients that you have, so that they start to engender more trust, right? How can you become the local expert for the technical bit that you're trying to produce, the execution side of things, right? How do you improve your quality control? How do you make sure that you are putting the best people on the project, or if you are in training mode, that you have someone looking over their shoulder so that they will have an ability to learn, but the work product is going to follow the code of conduct that you guys have already established. And then what is it in your own behavior that may need to be fixed? Are you a short-tempered human being? Do you tend to exaggerate in your conversations? Do you follow through and do the things you're supposed to do? Or do you earn your keep and keep your word in the work that you do, right? And when things get tough, how do you get through the tough times? Do you call in help that, you know, maybe will help calm you down and provide some guidance? Do you take a break before you dive into the deep end? Or are you the kind of person that's kicking up dust all the time? I can imagine you're a third base coach and screaming and hollering an umpire or something, right? It's this type of behavior is not it's not helpful. And in our environment, we have to interface with our peers, we have to interface with contractors, we have to interface with our clients, we have to interface with all kinds of different people who come at life with a lot going on. So we need to be able to step back, be mature about it, and stay calm when everything else has gone apoplectic. That's part of our job. And then finally, think about what it is you do on a day-to-day basis. What is it that you can create a process for? Even if the process isn't absolutely perfect yet, but what is the process that provides this sort of predictable behavior to everyone? And then how do you communicate that process so you don't have people wondering, what's the next step? Who's going to do this? When is it going to be done? And then start. So what happens is they start to fill in the holes with this negative stuff. So if I were you, that's kind of what I would be doing. I would look at the three different big buckets. What can you do different today so that you can be better off in the future and provide this really amazing thing to be someone's trusted advisor? As soon as you're their trusted advisor, you have a lot of latitude when it comes to what work you perform for them, because they know that you're going to treat them fairly. You have a lot of latitude of the types of projects you work on, because they are comfortable with you taking on something new that maybe you're not quite proven in for them, but they know who you are and they have had that positive experience. And I got to tell you, if you're the trusted advisor, your rate schedule, while fair, doesn't get to be the negotiation point, right? It's, hey, look, I need help. You're here to help me. And then you kind of raise your hand and say, yeah, I'm here to help. This is about what I think it's going to take. Are we okay? And on a handshake deal, you just move through the process and you work out the details as you get going. That is an amazing relationship to be able to have in this industry. You get a chance to be the local expert, and everyone else looks at you and says, oh my gosh, if they're going to propose on this work, I don't want to be in the room because I'm just going to get my fanny handed to me. And these guys have this amazing relationship. You know, they're calling him in the middle of the night to say, hey, look, I've got an emergency and you're my guy or you're my gal. How do we do this together? I want that for you. So if you could do me a favor and go to your email and send me a message to Bradley@WaldropCommunications.com. That's Bradley, B-R-A-D-L-E-Y, at Waldrop, W-A-L-D-R-O-P, communications.com, and let me know of those three things. What are the hardest for you to work on? What are you trying? What have you tried before? And what are the ways that we might be able to help you? And until then, take amazing care of you and take amazing care of your project, because you're really only one team away from absolute excellence. Talk to you soon.